Welcome in to another episode of Home Field Advantage. Hope you're all having a great week or weekend, whenever and however you may be listening to us across our great country or our great land. My name is Will Hound. It is April 10th, 2024, when I'm recording. You are likely listening on the 11th, the 12th, the 13th, something of the like. But nevertheless, like I said, no matter when or where, we're happy to have you joining the program today and bringing my sports takes to your personal device. That said, I got a little bit of an outside-the-box show today. I had planned on having Diesel in to talk some NHL, but we're going to knock that back a week, considering that the playoffs in the NHL don't begin until next weekend, and we won't figure out who the final seeds are and who the matchups are going to be or what the matchups are going to be until then. So we're going to hold off, and we'll dive into that next Wednesday night. As for tonight, it is my favorite night of the year. Actually, that's a little bit hyperbolic. It's one of my favorite nights in the sports calendar. You know, I was listening to Fox Sports Radio earlier. I forget the guy's name. They were filling in for Dan Patrick, and they were talking about the sports calendar, right? Like the events of the year in the world of sports, and this is something that I've harped on a lot too, that you look forward to the most. Obviously, last week or 2 weeks ago, we had baseball opening day. You know, I really like the college football playoff semifinals. I really enjoy the Winter Classic, right? Usually that's the same day as the college football playoffs. I enjoy, obviously, the first day of NFL season. I enjoy the Stanley Cup playoffs opening day, which will be about a week in change from now, next weekend, like I said. So there's a handful of days that I circle on my sports calendar, you know, when I first hear of them. You know, Red Sox home opener at Fenway was yesterday, right? So that's one of them too. April is full of them. But the one that I haven't mentioned yet is the night before the Masters. So tomorrow marks the start of the Masters, which for those of you who have lived under a rock, that is, in my opinion, the most prestigious event in golf. It's the best of the four majors. I believe this is the 90th or 91st rendition of the Masters, although I could be wrong there because I believe they took a break during World War II. I'll fact check that in a little bit. But either way, it's like the 88th, 89th, 90th, something like that version of the Masters. So it's been going on quite a long time. There's a long-standing history in the sport of golf with this event. Now, I'm not going to pretend that everything about the Masters and Augusta National's history is ironclad, but in the modern era, say from the 1960s, 70s, 80s onward, however you want to draw that line, Jack Nicklaus to the present, for example, this has been the premier event in golf at one of, if not the best course in the country, in my opinion, the world. So that's a long-winded way of saying the Masters rocks. I love this tournament. There's something about it. You know, if you're watching on a Saturday afternoon and you're like me and you live in the Northeast and you haven't had a lot of sunny days for a while, you see them on this 15th or 16th hole heading toward the end. The shadows are just right. It's sunny. There's a lot of green. There's green grass, green trees, green jackets. The sand traps, it's just aesthetically amazing. I've known people who have gone there. It is on my sports bucket list. But it's one of my favorite events of the year. I love the Masters. There's just something like romantic about, the Masters tournament and what it stands for, in the modern age of golf, which is tradition and, sportsmanship and, I think just a way of life, like a that has gone by, you know, or passed us by. And what I mean by that is, you look at the concession stand that always goes viral. You know, the menu. You're talking food. You could get out of there, be well fed for under $10 or $12, right? Like that doesn't exist in sports nowadays. I mean, you might have to sell a kidney to get into the Masters as a spectator. But once you're there, the merch, the menu, the aesthetic, I've heard that it's second to none. And it's a sporting experience that has really passed us by. So much of sports nowadays, if you're there in person, is loud, expensive, crowded. I'm sure it's crowded, I guess. Don't get me wrong, but at least the crowds are managed a little bit. And it's not really enjoyable. Unless you're in your seat watching the game and you have a good view, most of the time you'd be hard pressed to find somebody who has a good experience at a pro sporting event when they're not in their seat. It's just, you're waiting in line for the bathroom, you're doing this. So at least watching it on TV, I don't get that vibe. Look, if any of my listeners, if you guys have been fortunate enough to go to the Masters, write me and let me know that I'm way off base. But it just reminds me, not just economically, not just for the spectators, but for the sports and the spectacle that it brings, is something that sort of passed the sporting world by. I think a lot of what goes on in pro sports now is watered down. And perhaps it's because this happens once a year. I don't get the commercialization with the Masters that I feel when I watch the Olympics or the Super Bowl or the World Cup. So in that regard, it's one of my favorite events of the year. Now, as far as on the course and what's going to happen, look, there's no way to predict what's going to happen in the Masters. There's just not. People can talk about Brooks Koepka or Scottie Scheffler or guys that have succeeded well in the past at this event, or DJ in the past few years. But the long story short is, a lot of times in this tournament, you end up with sort of a random winner once in a while. So as I pointed out earlier, if you go back through some of these winners, last year was Rahm. In 2022, it was Scheffler. Then you had Hideki Matsuyama, Dustin Johnson, Tiger Woods, and then Patrick Reed, Sergio Garcia, Danny Willett. So you had like 2 out of 3 years there, the Danny Willett, Patrick Reed year in both 16 and 18 respectively, were sort of a random winner. Like Sergio Garcia, I wouldn't call him random. I believe he's the, I think he might be like the fifth or sixth different Spaniard to win it. There's been a lot of Spaniards to win it. Obviously, Rahm. I'm looking back. You have Garcia, Jose Maria Olazabal, won it a couple times. And then you have Seve Ballesteros, who I'm probably butchering his name. He won it a couple times. So Rahm is in the conversation. There's been a lot of controversy around Rahm and what he's chosen to do. But he is, as a winner, always going to have an invite. And so he's somebody that people are talking a lot about again this year. But look at the rest of this field. There could be a first-time random winner. In fact, I would, if I was betting on this, which I'm not, but I am doing a pool with my friends, I'm going to put some guys in there that, they might cost me if they don't do well, and I might lose the pool. But usually in the Masters, there's one or two guys who just sort of spring up the leaderboard a little bit and surprise you. So, for example, last year's leaderboard, let's find it here. You had the top 10 was pretty much guys you had heard of, except for somebody named Russell Henley. Never really heard of him. And you also had some guys make a push like Cam Young, who are sort of on the periphery, Saeed Theegala on the periphery, Matt Fitzpatrick, as a major winner, but he just came onto the scene really like 2017, 18. But then you had like Phil, who's a major winner, who's won this tournament before, who just sort of burst into second place. So there's a little bit of ambiguity and chance involved with the Masters. It's not like, oh, Scottie Scheffler is the best golfer in the world, so like pencil him in for a win. Like Woods won in 19, coming off a series of years where he hadn't won anything, really of value. So that's all really cool to talk about. But you guys are probably wondering who I think is going to win the Masters. I've been aren't going on and on about it for 10 or 15 minutes at this point. If I had to pick one of the three guys from last year who performed well, who are young, and who are upstanding for this year, you've got Rahm, you've got Kepka, and you've got Scheffler. I mean, we haven't had a repeat winner since Tiger in 19, and he had won it multiple times before that anyway. But you haven't had a guy win 2 out of 3 years and win his second since Bubba Watson did in 14 after winning in 12. You might recall that in 2012 he had that amazing shot from basically out of bounds that helped him secure that win. But you could put that on Scheffler. You think about some of these guys that win a lot of majors, they usually rattle them off quickly and separate from one and not separate from one another, close to one another. That said, he's a, I don't know if he's the overwhelming favorite. I haven't looked at the odds. I should probably Google that. Masters odds to win. I guarantee you he's probably the favorite. USA Today, let's see. So Jon Rahm is a favorite at +1200. Brooks Koepka is at +2000. Is this even the right year? How is Scheffler not in the top? What? That's crazy. Have I missed something? Is Scheffler's definitely playing? I'm confused on why he's not. I know this isn't great content here. I would have guessed he's the leader. That might be the best bets to make. That might not be what the actual odds are here. Okay, Vegas Insider should have it. Okay, I was right. Scottie Scheffler, according to Bet365, MGM, FanDuel, and DraftKings, he's the favorite. Rory is the second favorite, followed by Rahm, Spieth, Joaquin Niemann, Abraham Answer, a ton of live guys, Victor Hovland, Paul Casey. Okay, so then it sort of drops off from there. Scheffler's the popular pick. I'm going to have him in my pool. You same thing about Brooks or DJ or any of those guys. Spieth is somebody who Spieth and Rory or JT, they're a little bit controversial in terms of how well they stack up if you're betting on it. I'm not. What I'm telling you is if you want to pick a Masters dark horse, I have three guys who came to mind. All right. Give me Adam Hadwin, the Canadian. I don't think a Canadian has ever won the Masters. I'm gonna fact check myself real quick. Again, not great content, but I don't think a Canadian has ever won the Masters. Oh, I'm wrong. Mike Weir did it in 03. And he's back. All right. So I was wrong. But I go Adam Hadwin as number one dark horse. I don't even know what are his odds to win. He's a +20,000 to win. If somebody takes that bet, I think FanDuel has him at +27,000 to win. Just behind Phil. So if you want to get rich quick, maybe write me a check after. I'm not a betting guy, but go Adam Hadwin. That's my number one dark horse. He couldn't miss the cut, and I would look like a buffoon, but I'm doing it. All right. My second pick, dark horse, is Cam Young. Cam Young, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, is a plus 4,500 at this point. Cam Young, as I mentioned earlier, finished seventh last year, had a pretty good showing. Wouldn't be surprised if somebody like that pulls it off. You know, a name you might have heard of if you're an ardent follower of golf, but not somebody who, you know, is beating down the door with popularity. All right. And let's see, my third guy, dark horse to win. All right. Give me. Where'd he go? I want to make sure I say his odds correctly. That's who I wanted. Give me Sam Burns. All right. Sam Burns had a couple good showings. I forget. I'm not caught up on Full Swing. So I missed some of it. Sorry, my video's back. I missed some of it, but give me Sam Burns as a dark horse because he played really well a couple of years ago. I forget which particular major. I'm gonna look him up real quick just to make sure I'm not, you know, butchering that. But Sam Burns, young, only 27, never won a major, hasn't finished higher than it was the 2022 PGA Championship. He was 20th. Okay, so it wasn't like he was amazing, but he was 29th last year, 20th, 27th, and 42. Like, he hasn't had a major finish inside the top 20 in his career. He only has 5 PGA Tour wins since 2017. And these are the kind of guys that prop up out of nowhere, like a Danny Willett did in 2016. And they sort of shock you a little bit. So give me Sam Burns, Cameron Young, and Adam Hadwin as your three. If you want to get rich quick, boys and girls, those three as your dark horse winners for the Masters. Who I actually think is going to win, it's probably going to be one of those superstars you heard of. You know, JT, Rory, Spieth, Scheffler, of course. Kepka, somebody like that. I would love it if like a guy like Ricky Fowler won, never won a major. Tommy Fleetwood, I don't think has ever won a major. I like those guys. You know, that would be a cool story for me personally. All right. Speaking of cool stories. All right, the Celtics have been a cool story this year. Everyone's all jazzed up about them. I went down there for a game in January. It was a lot of fun. There was a lot of buzz. It was awesome. They've also been winning a boatload of games. And they've performed really well in consistent fashion. There's only been a couple blips on the radar. I think they've only lost back-to-back games twice all season. And that was one time early on against Minnesota and Philly. And then that was in one of those weird 2 games in 3 days in the same place sort of things that the NBA is doing. And that was with Atlanta. But other than that, they haven't lost two in a row all season. They lost last night to Milwaukee, 104-91. The Celtics sort of get into this habit, I think, once in a while of looking bored. I think the Celtics are a team that needs motivation sometimes. But I think, without a doubt, they're the best team in the Eastern Conference. Look, they've got like a, what, 15-game lead in the conference. You know, I'd put the Celtics up with anybody in the NBA at this point easily. You know, you can make an argument Denver's better. But I mean, the Celtics are 62 and 17. I mean, full stop. They've got a 14 game lead in the conference. Milwaukee picked up a game on them yesterday, but the Celtics have wrapped up the number one seed. You know, the road to the NBA Finals in the East runs through Boston. So from that perspective, they should, because this is the NBA, make the finals. They have a top five player in the league, in my opinion, in Jason Tatum. Again, not a huge basketball guy, but I got a pair of eyes. At worst, top 10 player. I think they have another top 20 player in Jaylen Brown. They brought in Porzingis and Jrue Holiday exactly for this reason. Mazzulla is no longer a first-year head coach. They have good bench players like Peyton Pritchard and others, Al Horford. They should be a finalist for this league at the very minimum. Now, you might want to ask, and I've thought, can anyone beat them besides Denver? But can anybody in the East specifically beat them? Well, last night Milwaukee did. And I would argue that even if Giannis isn't 100% healthy, I mean, that's still a team that I don't want to play. Luckily, if they're going to be the two, unless the Knicks catch them, the Magic and the Knicks are sort of kicking at their heels a little bit. But I just looked at the standings. I did not know that off the top of my head. But if it's the Bucks and you're not going to play until the conference final, okay. But I don't want to scare Celtics fans because I know this is emotional after what happened in 2020 and in 2023. But the Miami Heat are sitting at the eighth seed right now. They're going to have to play in that play-in thing, which is ridiculous and I loathe it, but they're going to have to play in that in order to actually make the playoffs and be the eighth seed. Chicago and Atlanta are hanging around too. Atlanta's a team that, like I just said, beat the Celtics twice already this year. And then the Sixers hanging around at seven. I mean, if one of those teams, the Hawks, the Heat, or the Sixers, and you're playing them in the first round, the Celtics should win that series, probably in five or six, maybe even a sweep. But what I've learned about this Celtics team, here we are in year seven or eight of the we're gonna win a championship next year window. I don't really know what I just did there. Okay, sorry. We're in like year seven or eight of this we're gonna win a championship next year sort of time frame. And one thing I hear year after year is, oh well, we just flip the switch in the playoffs. We're gonna be a completely different team in the playoffs. I mean, yeah, I would hope so, but I really haven't seen it. I mean, last year against the Heat, that was abysmal. That was brutal. In the Warriors series, look, you got beat by a better team and an all-time great player. Year before that, you had a really let down against the Nets. And then you had the weird bubble year where you should have won the title. And then before that, you had another early exit. That was the big Kyrie meltdown experience. And the year before that, you lost to LeBron at home in game seven. And you had a better team than the Cavs, in my opinion. You might not have had the best team on paper, but you were playing better. 2017 was a different story. But either way, we're in like year five, six, seven, or eight, depending on how you want to slice it. And that this Celtics team is win or go home. And I've said this a lot. It pretty much is true this year. And they really need to just play consistently from start to finish. They can't give away games. Like, it's okay to give away a game when you haven't played a meaningful basketball game in months because they've had the conference on lock since like mid-February when they went on a big long win streak. So they're gonna have to play better in the playoffs this year than they have in recent years. But this is exactly why Stevens brought in those guys I mentioned, Holiday, Porzingis. Was for these moments, for them to be a better team in April, May, and June than they have in recent seasons. And if you go to the NBA Finals and you lose to Denver, I mean, that will sting, but that might tell you something about this team. It just might. They're built to win a championship right now. And if that doesn't happen right now, I'm not sure what other buttons you can push. But we'll have that to talk about if it happens. Right now, I'm sticking with the here and now. And the here and now is, look, they have a couple bad losses every once in a while, But they consistently can rattle off five or six, seven, eight wins in a row this season with ease. They've never lost more two games or in a row more than twice. It's only happened twice all year. They're just a really talented basketball team, with a deep bench, Derek White as well. And at this moment in time, it's championship or bust. And that is what that's what I asked for in my Christmas list for Boston sports fans. And that's what I think the Celtics team needs to do to get the monkey off their back, or get the whatever analogy you want to use, whether it's get the monkey off their back or bury the hatchet or anything like that. This Celtics team needs to do all of the proverbial cliches. They need to win the games they're supposed to win. They need to, deal with adversity and all this stuff that you hear in sports all the time. There's really no more excuses. And to be quite honest, I don't think anybody in the East can beat them in a seven game series. Milwaukee, sure. They've had a couple close games with Milwaukee. In fact, beyond that loss, last night, I mean, they've played Milwaukee two other times and they got blown out once, but then the other game was really close. So I think if you're the Celtics and that's the team you're going to see in the conference final, that should be your floor. Your floor should be winning the East, but at very least, you got to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. If you don't, it'd be a colossal failure. If you lose to Milwaukee or Denver, whatever, I'm sure Celtics fans would be heartbroken. I would be, as a casual Celtics fan, kind of frustrated with them. But this Celtics team is good enough to run the table and win the championship. And so that's truly what I expect them to do. All right. Speaking of running the table, there used to be a deep population of major league starting pitchers that you could see as future Hall of Famers. But now it's going to take one of these guys who I'm about to go through running the table in order to make it to Cooperstown. You might be asking, well, what do you mean by that? I talked about this with Paul Ulrich, who came on the show several years ago, I think 3 years ago at this point. And not much has changed since. Right now, you have three guys who are probably locks for Cooperstown: Verlander, Scherzer, and Kershaw, who are technically, according to Baseball Reference, considered active. All right, those three guys are locks for Cooperstown. Beyond that, your fourth leader, so call it your first leader after like next year in wins, is Gerrit Cole. Now, I know you guys are probably like, well, wins aren't really a good stat for major league starting pitchers, blah, 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 ERA plus, spin rate, whip, blah, 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 analytics, yada, yada, yada. I'm telling you, wins might not be great on a year-in, year-out basis, but if you're going to make it to Cooperstown, you can use JAWS, you can use ERA plus, you can use any of these other advanced sabermetrics, which are fine. But I'm telling you that if you are in the neighborhood of 200 wins, you're going to make it to Cooperstown, usually, if the rest of your numbers are good enough. So all else being equal, wins do matter. That being said, Gerrit Cole has 145. 145. He's not going to make it to, I don't think he might. He's 33. He might make it to 200 wins. Lance Lynn is next on the list. He won't. He's 37. He's got 136. It's over for Lance Lynn. Gerrit Cole's 33. He's got 145. Let's say he wins. Well, first of all, he's out this year. That's another subject we could get to in a second. But then you're going to have Well, he might not be out for the year, but actually, yeah, he'll be back. All right, but anyway, let's say he wins 10 this year, conservatively. That gets him to 155, maybe 15. Let's say he wins an average of 12 games for the next 4 years. That will get him in the 180s. Maybe the 190s. It's not a lock that Gerrit Cole's going to get 200, actually. Lance Lynn, nope. Charlie Morton, he's 40, nope. Chris Sale, he's 35. I love Chris Sale. I've made that pretty apparent on this program. He's not going to get there. If he hadn't dealt with injury, he was probably a lock for Cooperstown because of his strikeout numbers. You usually got to have 3,000 Ks, 200 wins. You got to have an ERA around four or lower. That's going to get you in the Hall of Fame. But then after those guys, I would consider Gerrit Cole and Lance, and Chris Sale to be in the conversation with Verlander, Scherzer, and Kershaw on paper with if you're just talking about talent. But then all of a sudden you get into what I like to call longevity guys. Wade Miley, Carlos Carrasco. These guys are all in the 10 single digits. Dallas Keuchel, Sonny Gray. Sonny Gray hasn't even got his 100th win. We might not see another guy. Honestly, Gerrit Cole might be the last guy you see that has a chance at 200 wins. Because the rest of these guys on this list, nobody under the age of 32 has even gotten 75 yet, except for Eduardo Rodriguez. Nobody else under the age of 32 has even gotten to 75. There's no way those guys are getting 125 more wins in 8 years. It's just not going to happen. So we've sort of seen the death of the 200 game winner in a career. And you might ask, why is that? Well, there's been a lot of talk about pitcher injuries and guys throwing less, but throwing harder. And by less, I mean less often. There might, be a lot to do with the spin rate and the elbow surgeries. And, the Orioles announcer was saying that, 10 years ago, the surgeries were nine shoulders, one elbow. Now it's nine elbows, one shoulder. Pitchers have always gotten hurt. There's some data to say that this year isn't much of an anomaly. It just feels like it is because the names have been pretty big, right? You think about Scherzer coming back from injury. You think about the Gerrit Cole or Spencer Strider or people who are, looked at very highly in this league. Those are some of the pitching injuries we've seen. But I mean, Nate Eovaldi's had, I think, had Tommy John surgery a handful of times. Look, Chris Sale, that's going to be what keeps him out of the Hall of Fame. It's his injuries. So Jacob deGrom, we've saw it. He would have been a guy that could have been there in that conversation. But there's really not a lot of guys out there now. You start looking around. Blake Snell's got 71. He's already 31 years old. The rest of this group, the You have to go all the way down to Shane Bieber to find somebody under the age of 30. He's only got 62 wins. And guess what? Shane Bieber is one of those guys who also just got injured, who I didn't mention when I brought up Cole and Strider. So you got to go all the way down to Shane Bieber to find somebody under the age of 30 with a strong amount of wins. Guess what? Guess who's the next guy under the age of 30? Lucas Giolito with 61 wins. He also is done for the year. So think about this is proving my point. These things are connected. The lack of pitchers late in their careers who are going to have that signature 200 win, there's a reason why we're not getting them. It's not because they're not as good, it's because they're getting hurt. It's because we don't value the win anymore. We don't value a pitcher being able to go five plus innings, give you a quality start, and put together a complimentary performance on all sides of the baseball, so to speak. We don't value that in our game anymore. So, you can continue going down this list, and there's just a bunch of guys. I mean, Walker Buehler, I believe he's had an injury already in his career too. He's 29. He's only got 46 career wins. It's wild to me. It really is wild to me. And I'm not, I didn't even plan that part, getting to Shane Bieber and Lucas Giolito. But that's the reality. I don't know where Nola is on this list. Aaron Nola's got 91 wins and he's 31. He might be your best bet after Cole. Might be Aaron Nola. 91 wins at 31 years old. He's got to play. He's got to have, let's see, he needs 109 wins in, let's call it 8 or 9 years. I mean, if he gets like 13 wins a year for a few years, maybe he busts out a really amazing back-to-back years where he gets 18 and 18 or something. But, that's asking a lot of a dude. I think the era of the 200-game winner, this sort of golden age we've had for the last 15 years with Verlander, Scherzer, Kershaw, I don't think that's something we're going to see because of these injuries. You're not going to have guys who, you might have guys who pitch deep into their careers and rack up wins, like Sonny Gray, who's going to be 34. He'll probably get, somewhere around 150 wins. Nothing to sneeze at for a career. But think about how many times Sonny Gray's been hurt. A lot. I think Yu Darvish has missed time. A lot of these guys on this list have missed time in one way or another. Jose Berríos is 30. He's got 85 wins. He's in the conversation. So I think I did miss Berríos and Nola when I got down to Erod at 24. But I mean that's your squad. I mean, Eduardo's 31 and Nola's 31, the same age, they're only separated by 9 wins. I consider Aaron Nola to be one of the best pitchers in the league. He only has 9 more wins than Eduardo Rodriguez, the same age. So I think long story short, the era is over. It has a lot to do with the elbow injuries. It has a lot to do with this nature of the game of baseball now. And last but not least, it just has a lot to do with, free agency and contracts. I think that a lot of these guys, these starting pitchers, they'll sign their big deal and they won't sort of team hop like Verlander and Scherzer did late in their careers. I'm not convinced that will happen in the same way. They won't team hop after they've won like those guys did. They'll sort of team hop after, their big contract runs out. So there's a lot of factors that go into it. There's not one way, but there are a lot of factors that are sort of making this game of baseball, this iteration of baseball, not like the one I grew up with. Is that better? Is that worse? I'm not sure. I'll leave that up to you to decide. I still love this game. I still think there's a lot of potential in this game. I think the game has rebounded. I think the COVID era and the 2021 era, maybe it's a 2022 lockout thing. That was really bad. I think they've rebounded a little bit. But this is certainly a hiccup, and it's something that they're going to have to figure out. Corbin Burnes has just, I'm only bringing this up because he absolutely shut down the Red Sox yesterday. He's 29, and he's got 47 wins. He could be somebody that pushes 150, but you just never know. These guys are all an injury away. Dylan Cease at 28 years old with only 43 wins. I mean, he's not winning 15 games a year for the next 10 years, folks. That's just not happening. So I think the era is over. But this podcast is indeed over as well. I appreciate you all tuning in this week. You can catch us on Sunday afternoon. I can't promise I'll do a pod because I'm going to be locked on Masters. But maybe we'll check in Mondays. and you break down the Masters and get ready for our NHL playoff preview with Diesel next week, about a week from now. Until then, I encourage you all to follow us on socials wherever you wish. That's at HomeFieldPod on both Instagram and Twitter. You can also subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts if you're just listening for the first time. That includes our YouTube channel as well. And of course, all audio platforms, including Spotify, Apple, Google, and Stitcher. But as I said, until next time, hope you have a great rest of your week. My name is Will Hyland, and you have been listening to Home Field Advantage. If you liked this podcast, please subscribe on your favorite provider, including Spotify, Apple, Google, and Stitcher. Be sure to also check us out 2 times a week on those platforms, on Monday and on Thursday. All of the Sportland USA programs are independent, and the opinions expressed in them do not reflect those of any other company, outlet, person, or entity.